Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Hello and welcome to Owl Post as it's freshly delivered for you today. I am just one of your hosts, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is always, we have survived the dragon attack, Treya Kaufman.
Hello. The dragon attack that's called work.
That yes, yes. I like
on a holiday week.
I like to think of work as a dragon attack every single day. I survive it and somehow get through it.
I always want to think about it as like a secret dragon attack. And I don't know why it should be secret because like we know and all that. But like it to me, it always feels like a secret.
Yeah, it just kind of sneaks up on you and then smacks you around and then sends you home. Yeah. To do it the next day. So,
yep, all that.
Well, this episode we'll be talking about chapter 20 here in the Goblet of Fire, the first task. But before we do that, a quick reminder to everyone, you can find us all over the place. We are everywhere you get your podcasts, but Apple Podcasts is a great place to check us out. And while you're over there, hit us up with a star rating and review. Make sure you do that because it really does help other people find the show. Owlpost is just growing by leaps and bounds, and part of that is those reviews and ratings and people just sharing us all over the place. You can find us on social media. We're over at Join Nerd Party. Make sure that you follow us there on Twitter. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty. Make sure you're liking us. You can interact with us there as we post all of our shows. You can find us online at thenerdparty.com. And last but not least, if you would like to send us an email, go to thenerdparty.com/contact, choose a show, choose Owlpost. That comes to Dre and I, and we'll be able to interact with you that way. But with so many ways to interact with us, I think it's time to just dive into this chapter. And I think it's so interesting to me that, you know, we are waiting for this first task, and it's finally almost here, and poor Harry still has no idea what he's going to do about this dragon. But on top of that, he's also got Karkaroff to worry about. And I love the advice that Hermione gives him. It's like, why don't we just try and worry about your dragon problem, and then we'll worry about Karkaroff in case you're not dead by then.
Yeah, I like that. Let's worry about the one that comes up first, and then move on to the next one.
Yeah. I mean, it's good advice, right? You know, just deal with one problem at a time.
It's good life advice, everyone. It's good advice. Hey, there's a lot of stuff on your plate. If there's a Death Eater after you, don't worry about the Death Eater. Let's worry about, you know, the dragon instead. And then you can get to the former Death Eater. It'll be okay.
Well, and I totally understand that there's this problem that they have, which is, you know, Harry had been told by Sirius, you know, it's just a simple spell. Just use a simple spell. And they're looking through all of these books in the library, and apparently there are no simple spells to deal with dragons because they're pretty spell repellent for the most part.
I know. I like how he's just like, what are you talking about? You could just see him being like, just tell me the answer. Stop like making me jump through these riddles.
Well, and on top of that, it doesn't really help that every time they're in the library, Victor Krum ends up in the library, and right. He's got an entourage, and it still really pisses off Hermione, so they just leave the library.
Yeah, she finds it really distracting. Well, no, I like that when they leave the library, they're like, oh, he's here. Oh, it's just a matter of time before his entourage shows up. We should go. And then as they're leaving, they're just like, oh, there's a group of girls whispering to each other, enter the library, and you're like, and she was right.
You know, I wonder if that happens with Chris Pratt everywhere he goes. If there's just like a gaggle of girls that kind of follow him, you know?
I feel like he goes incognito. I feel like he's the kind of person who puts like a baseball cap down and like
wears
keeps
baggy
his shirt
clothes,
collar up and doesn't,
you know,
like look and stuff.
Oh, goodness. Well, still no luck. And so this is something that I really like, too, is the way that Harry interacts with Cedric, and he tells him, and of course, it's hard to get near Cedric because he's always got friends talking to him, but he is able to, he breaks his backpack with a spell. He splits it right open so he can split Cedric from the rest of the group, which I love. And I also kind of like it, like Harry, I feel like in the stories, you know, Harry doesn't always think of using magic first, but this is one of those moments where he's like, oh yeah, I could do this. And then he does it and he does the spell. And it's just kind of one of those moments where I'm like really proud of Harry for kind of thinking of magic.
Yeah. You're like, oh yeah, he's getting it. He's coming around. He's coming around. I do like that moment though. Like I do really appreciate what it adds to Harry's character that he felt like it wasn't fair. You know, that Cedric was the only one who didn't know. We don't really hear much about who Cedric's, like, advocate is in this case. You know, we know Madame Maxine is Floor's advocate, and Karkaroff is obviously Crumb's, and, you know, everyone seems to be Harry's. So we don't really get a strong impression of who's sort of coaching or on Cedric's side. So it's kind of nice to have, you know, at least Harry going, oh well, I don't think anyone's looking out for him, so at least let's level the playing field so that I don't feel guilty. So it was a nice moment.
Well, and I love that too, because Cedric even asked him, why are you telling me? And he's like, well, I mean, it's just fair, isn't it? Now we're all on equal footing. And it is fascinating to me. And we've talked about this before, but just the who Harry is, that he would feel like this, because I think, you know, if we look at the psychology of where he grew up, you know, nothing was fair in the household he grew up in. And so he is somebody who is pretty dedicated to this idea of doing things on equal footing. And I really appreciate that about the character. And what I appreciate about it too is that, as we've said before, Harry has every right to be just a little jerkwad because of where he came from, right? Because he hasn't had anything else modeled from him. And yet, who he is somebody who actively chooses to be different. And it's the choices. It's just what Dumbledore said in the second book. It's our choices that define who we are and our actions. And so I
feel like in this moment, it's even stronger that Harry maybe has a reason, right? He's young and underskilled compared to the other competitors. He has an even stronger reason to be like, I need the leg up, and they don't need the leg up, you know? But I feel like Harry kind of always approaches things with this perspective of like, I do to others what I would want them to do to me. So kind of the golden rule a little bit, but like he just wants to, he treats others the way that he would like them to treat him back. And, you know, he just does it from the standpoint of, you know, if I do it, then others will be inspired to do it too. And that's the sign of a true leader, right? Of exhibiting the leadership qualities and the skills and compassion and fairness and equality that he feels like everyone should exhibit. So, you know, it really is just another true testament. And it's the same characteristic we've kind of seen, like you mentioned, but it's almost developing and sort of maturing as we go. So it's really a nice little like touch into that, back into that. That's not just, you know, hammering it into you. And again, yes, we get it, Harry, you're great, you know, but it's, you know, it's important, you know, everyone now can kind of prepare for this super daunting task.
I think it'll be interesting to see the way that this chapter does tie into the next chapter, because I think a piece of what you just said plays into something that we see in the next chapter, which is Harry's doing the right thing and inspiring others to do the right thing and having a good impact on other people's lives. So I think that's a really cool thing that she plays with. And of course, you know, Mad-Eye sees what's happened, and he calls Potter to come with him to his office, and they have this conversation, which, first, I love how Mad-Eye has stripped down this room and turned it into, I guess, like, dark wizard detector headquarters with all of these different things that detect dark wizards and lying and all these things like that. I love he has
paranoid
like this,
wizard central.
Yes, yes. It is kind of like he's like a one of those people who is
this is the equivalent of like wearing tinfoil on your head for a wizard. He's like a little bit crazy and you're like, I get it, but I'm pretty sure if you'd read Hogwarts, a history, you'd know that most of the things you're trying to detect are not possible.
Well, he's like one of those people who's like in a bunker in the middle of like Montana, you know?
This is Cloverfield Lane.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that what I'm hearing?
Pretty much.
He's John Goodman
like
in Cloverfield Lane.
Mm-hmm. Super creepy. Well, and I mean, part of that too, like you can understand, like from what we know about Moody, is he's been in order, he's seen a lot of stuff. Obviously, he was involved in the whole war against Voldemort the first time. And of course, now they're seeing this rise of Death Eaters and Death Eater activity and everything. So it kind of makes sense.
you can see it, but at the same time, you know, it forgets about the protections that are in place with Hogwarts. And then he even goes in to say, like, all of the stuff going on here, it's messing with my instruments because they're kind of going all off the charts and acting all weird. And, you know, he chalks it up to the fact that at Hogwarts there's all kinds of stuff going on, so it's really hard for them to work properly anyway. So then you're like, then why are they up? Like, why are you doing that? They
it
must just be a
them
source of comfort, you know?
I love too how Harry's like, I wasn't meaning to like break the rules, and he's like, it's okay. Cheating's part of the Triwizard Tournament, and like that makes sense, you know? Like it just kind of makes sense, and they have this whole conversation like where Moody is trying to get him to figure out what his strengths are, and this is another thing that I loved about Harry. Harry's like, I don't have any strengths. Like he's so. I wouldn't say it's really humble because I don't think it's a sense of humility, but I think Harry doesn't have a good self-worth. He doesn't see what makes him what he is. And so it really isn't like he's being humble because he recognizes what his strengths are and he's just answering, oh, you know, it's not that. And he has to be told, you are good at certain things. And the only thing he can think of is like, well, I mean, I guess I'm a fair flyer, you know.
So like, I kind of read that a little differently. I see where you're coming from. I more read it as like Harry was so, he was too involved and too like in the middle of everything to stop and think about what, like he couldn't think outside the box. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Oh, what are your strengths? Oh, well, I'm not good at transfiguration. I'm not good at charms. I'm not good at potion. He, instead of thinking just straight up, what am I good at? Like as a skill, right? So I got it more as like, he wasn't really good at thinking outside the box. And so he couldn't really pinpoint like what magical trait he thought he was good at. Because he's still learning and he's still young and he, you know, as we come to learn, he, you know, he isn't good at the summoning charm and he literally has to spend forever trying to learn that. You know, I more read it as like he just couldn't, he was too close to the problem to creatively problem solve. And so he just needed Mad-Eye to bring like, I just need to jog your memory. I need to get you to think about this differently. Like we just need to change our perspective. And less about him being humble and more just about him. Like, I just don't know. I don't know how to think outside this box, which is a great lesson, right? Because I feel like a lot of us have been there where we're like, I just don't know the solution to my problem. And someone comes to you and they're like, hey, well, what if you think about it this way? And you're like, oh my God, now I get it. And that's a great lesson. And so I think it's that lesson he learns at, you know, 14 instead of 24 or whatever, that we all learn it. So I kind of looked at it more as a lesson in problem solving and less an inability to sort of self-evaluate, which he probably also can't do. But he was too close to the problem and too overwhelmed, I felt, to come up
with a solution. Yeah, I think that's a good point. You know, and I think it's something which is pretty relatable. You know, I think we've all been there. We're just like flummoxed as to what to do about an issue because we can't see past anything, you know?
You're just so tired. You yeah. don't know what to do if you are out of dish soap and you don't know how to fix that problem of getting more dish soap. Oh, look, there's more dish soap.
Well, and it makes so much sense. You know, we get from the beginning of the whole chapter here that it hasn't been an easy time for him. He's lost his best friend. He's not necessarily sleeping great. You know, he's being watched all the time by everybody at school and being picked on. Like, his classes aren't going awesome. Like, it has been an awful year so far. And I love that he finally figured out what Moody's trying to get him to. And he's runs to Hermione and he's like, Hermione, I've got to learn to do a summoning char by tomorrow.
Right now.
Yeah, pretty much right now. And I love that Hermione, like, does everything that she can do to help him. Like, she kind of drops everything she can to help him out. And I mean, they're working till 2 a.m. To try and figure this out. And he's finally starting to get better at it. And he's been focusing so hard on it that, like, he's not ready really necessarily for the next day when McGonagall's like, Potter, let's go. We've got to get to the grounds right now. You got to get ready for your first task.
I love that. What I love about that is that, so he's not very good at it, right? He's trying and he's trying and he's trying and it eventually kind of happens, but that's it. I like how that plays out further into the chapter. And kind of just, it's something she does with the, I don't know, magical things in general, right? Same with like when he cast a Patronus in the last book and how, you know, he's like, oh, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. And then when put into an emotional sort of crisis situation, he was very successful, speaking to sort of that natural talent that he has and just kind of unlocking that. And I think it's a, you know, it's in the same thing happens here, right? He's like, I really hope this works. I really hope this works. And when, you know, he's under this undue stress, he's able to make it happen way better than he could have in the classroom because he's finally forced to rely on it and trust himself and really put, he's got to put all the eggs in the basket and he's got to do it, you know? And it really speaks to him being able to stop and just trust what's going to happen and really rely on himself. And it's such a cool like trait that they include in this in magic, and that it's not just about like knowing math or knowing science, you know, it's the situation in which and how he applies it that makes a difference as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which is unique to magic in general.
Yeah, and it's also like, it's really interesting that as he's walking with McGonagall, I love when we get kind of the personal side of McGonagall and how she's somebody who worries about Harry and really cares about him. And I like how they're walking down, you know, and she's like, okay, now don't panic. Just keep a cool head. Are you okay? Is everything okay? And Harry's like, yes, I'm fine. You know, like, and then the funniest thing about this chapter to me actually is when Bagman is telling them all about what they're, you know, going to be doing and that they're going to be, you know, picking out of this bag and that's what they'll be facing everything, and they got this golden egg, and it's so anticlimactic because they already all know.
Right.
So it really is kind of, to me, I don't even necessarily picture the movie scene, because the way she writes it, I'm kind of picturing them just so anxious to get ready to get going that, I don't know, there's something just I find kind of a hilarious about this scene where the kids are way ahead of the game here. So this is all this preliminary stuff is just getting, can we just get this over with?
Yeah. There's like this idea that he, like, everyone kind of already knows what's happening. And so they're all just kind of like, do, 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 violent. There's not the like tension that they build up in the movie, right? Like, they're not like, oh, you know, they're like, all right, I already know. Can we just, it's almost like I can see them like filing their nails, mm-hmm, or checking their Facebook or whatever. Instead, you know, they're just like, all right, whatever. All right, can we move on? And they're nervous. Obviously, they're nervous about the dragon, but they're like, you know, they're like this high level of like, oh my gosh, that they kind of create in the movie. It was a very different feeling. And, you know, obviously Harry doesn't do something stupid to blow it. And it's not, you know, with Mr. Crouch or whatever. So
Is Twitter for wizards hooting? Do they hoot?
Are they hooting instead of
Yeah, they're hooting. So they're just sitting there hooting, waiting for them. Yeah. I also think it's funny.
My hoot?
Yeah, that Bagman pulls Harry aside afterwards and is like, hey, you got everything you need? And it's like, it's kind of a weird scene.
Yeah. He has this like personal moment where he sort of like is coaching Harry. Like he's clearly taken to Harry as the favorite, and that's very different from the movie. You know, we don't get Bagman at all in the movie, nope. Honestly. But there's no like advocate for Harry in the movie. You know, it's just it's obviously Mad Eye, but it's not ministry based. Is there anyone sort of checking on him? I actually really liked the follow-up, and we can talk about the actual trial here in a second, but I actually really like the follow-up, how it was very real. It's like, go see Madame Pomfrey and she'll fix that real quick and then you can move on. There's mm-hmm. no like it's real, right? Oh, you got a couple scratches. We're gonna mend to you and you can move on, which it kind of made the whole thing seem more like it can actually see this happening. Mm-hmm. Like the logistics worked out.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree, because I feel like the whole thing is well set. One, I liked the description of where they are, that they're actually in the same grove as where the dragons had been placed in the first place, but they've then set up like a kind of like tent area, and then there is this setup where the dragons are, and you get like vaguely picture of it being in the trees, and then they've put all of these stands around, you know, for people to be able to sit in and watch. And
because in the movie they basically just use the Quidditch pitch is what it looks like.
Yeah, it does kind of feel like that a little bit. Yeah, they but this just makes more sense too.
Yeah, you know, I agree.
You want it in like in a forest grove where there's an opening but it's very secluded and everything. So yeah, and you also get the sense too, like these dragons aren't, there's only so much movement they have. I don't know. Just the way she describes it works so much better. But then I feel so bad for Harry having to sit there and listen to the play-by-play from Bagman about what's going on. And you're not getting to watch or anything, of course. He's just sitting there like, and all he's hearing is these dragon screams and roars and like, ugh. And then, of course, he gets out there and he calls his broom and he's able to get that. I mean, it's exciting, but you don't need us to replay it play by play.
Well, but I did like that in the book, it is much shorter and much less dramatic than in the movie. It's not nearly as like theatrical, which I get why you would do that for a movie with visuals and stuff, but like there's no weird dragon chase off around the castle mm-hmm. and like destruction of Hogwarts and like all that stuff. Like there's no, you know, drastic fall yep. to the death. Like it's very quick, very short. It's like a page and a half and he like tricks him, gets the egg and that's it. Like,
well, and part of that is because he's using moves that he saw in the Quidditch match at the beginning,
right?
Which is it works better here in the book because, you know, he's using some things he saw Crumb do in the Quidditch World Cup, some of the moves. And so I really appreciated that tie-in. And it
right.
makes it all seem like, okay, all this actually fits together better than, of course, the movie, which is, yes, just a big action set piece of, you know, Harry almost dying and nobody can tell where he is. And
they plunge to their death off this bridge and yeah.
Right. And it just makes so much more sense that they would have made sure that these dragons could not get loose because
it's not as easily as they made it
exactly.
seem in the movie. Yeah.
So, and I love that, you know, too, they've got all the dragon keepers there, right? You know, like Charlie Weasley and the rest of them that come subdue them. And, you know, they, like you said, they go see Madame Pomfrey. And I loved that part as well. I thought it really did add a lot of realism to this that, yeah, if kids are facing dragons, most likely they're going to get some scratches. They might get some burns. You know, they're going to get hurt most likely in this. And so having all that immediately set up, and I love the Madame Pomfrey's like, you know, last year Dementors, this year dragons, what else are they gonna bring to this school?
Someone doesn't pay that nurse enough.
No.
Someone does not pay that nurse enough at all. And she's the only one we ever see or hear about. Like, literally no additional nurses for this giant school of kids that they bring dragons to and dementors. And you're just like, oh, Lordy, someone give that nurse some time off and a raise.
Seriously, that or some wine or something.
Maybe both.
Or both. But I love to, you know, that Hermione runs in and she's like, oh, you're brilliant. You're amazing. And then the fact that they look at Ron, who looks, she describes, he looks very, very white. And he's like, I'm sorry. And I really do love that the way they played it in the movie, in the sense of the way that the actual phrasing used is the same. Caught on, have you? Took you long enough. Like, just.
Yeah, and I really like that Ron's argument is, like, I imagine you'd have to be bloody crazy to put your own name in. Like, I really like that he finally comes to this conclusion that, like, maybe it's not all, like, fame and glory for something like this. And it's actually really dangerous. And he couldn't imagine being qualified, you know? So, like, it's kind of nice he comes to that conclusion. And that's the same, I think, from the movie, too, where he's like, well, you had to be crazy to do this to yourself, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I, you know, I love, too, like, Ron is kind of, like, about to apologize, and Harry's like, forget it, it's cool. And Ron's like, no, and he's like, it's fine. And I love Hermione just burst into tears. Like, you two are so stupid.
I know. And I love that she just gives him a big hug because you can just feel. She's like, oh, thank God it's over. Like, you can just feel her stress, like, melt away. And like, you know. Like, I feel like I can really relate to that, where you're like, oh, thank God I don't have to worry about that anymore. You're like crying. You're like, it's so wonderful.
Oh, it's so great.
I wish you all could see my face during that.
It's pretty funny. And not only that, but I mean, immediately Harry and Ron just kind of fall back into it. He's telling them all about how the other contestants did and what they did and how the fact that Ron getting all mad at Karkaroff for giving him such a low score and just Harry feeling so good about himself because having his best friend back and being indignant on his behalf makes him feel so much better. And it's a really nice moment. And of course, you know, we find out Harry with the scores is actually tied for first place. And so, and then we find out they've got a really long time between this and the next task, which the next one's not till February.
And at this point, I want to say it's what, like September? No,
it's
November.
Like, I think it's like November, because they've already had Halloween, I believe.
And they came in the other schools came the beginning of October, I think it was.
Which, it does kind of make sense, because then you start the holiday season, you know, and classes are coming to a close, and so.
Well, yeah, but it still sucks.
You
still have to wait all that time. You still have to, like, fester.
But at this point, I mean, who cares? So, you know, you got all this time, and Rita Skeeter shows up and is like, Harry, can I get a quick word about how you're feeling? And Harry's like, yeah, I've got a word for you. Goodbye.
Yeah. So classy. Classy.
He got all sassy with her, and I just love it. Like, and I like that he's not a jerk. He's just, yeah, I've got a word for you.
Yeah. He's just sassy about it.
It's
he's just
awesome.
Like,
sassy yeah. Harry is the best Harry.
Sassy Harry is the best Harry.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sarcastic Harry is pretty great, too.
I mean, this is the thing that, and I have to say, I think that Daniel Radcliffe definitely pulled off the sarcastic and very dry sense of humor that Harry has perfectly. He really did. And his intonations and the way he said certain lines definitely plays into how I read some of these. So,
oh, definitely. I do read most of Harry's lines in Daniel Radcliffe's voice, even if he's maybe not the perfect, like, physical specimen. Mm-hmm. I do read it, like, with that, like, haughty, because he's quiet and, like, kind of, I don't know. I do. I read, at least so far, I've read them all in Daniel Radcliffe's voice. So we'll see if that continues as we get to angsty Harry or not. See if he can hold up to the angsty Harry.
Well, we'll have to wait.
Sorry, spoilers, everyone. Yep. Harry gets angsty as a teenager.
Oops.
Shocking.
Dang it. Now I don't have to read anymore. But we'll have to wait to chapter 21 to see what else happens as everything wraps up after the first task. But if anybody wants to catch up with Idrea and talk to you about this chapter or anything else that's going on, where can they find you?
Sure. If you want to come chat about angsty Harry in the future or how crazy weeks are that have holidays in the middle of them, you can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's C-O-F-F-M-A-N.
And you can find me on Twitter, MattRushing02. I am on Instagram under the same name. You can also find me here on the network doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills as we talk about Star Wars each and every week. And that's a lot of fun as we just kind of choose a topic in the Star Wars galaxy because we love Star Wars and we love talking about it. So join us. You can also find me over on the Trek FM network doing The Orb, Chris Jones, talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I'm also doing the 602 Club, which is the General Geek Show, where we talk about all the fandoms we love, from Star Wars to Harry Potter to Bond and so many more franchises. I can't even name them all here, so make sure you check that out. And then last but not least, I'm doing Cinema Stories with my good friend Courtney as we talk all about films through the lens of faith. But we want to thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.